This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. The U.S. Defense Department criticized Russia for targeting Ukrainian civilians after a deadly weekend strike on a multi-story building in Dnipro that killed dozens of people, including children, and injured dozens more.
We do know that Russia launched a very heavy salvo of missiles from aircraft, from naval vessels, and from land against Ukrainian civilian infrastructure and civilian targets.
Pentagon spokesperson Brigadier General Pat Ryder. The toll included 24 people initially listed as missing at the site, which housed about 1,700, according to the high-ranking official in the Ukrainian president's office. Ukrainian troops launched Polish so-called crab howitzers in the east on Tuesday in the eastern Donetsk region. The artillery brigade in command of the howitzers said they aimed to hit Russian troops assaulting Ukrainian positions. Poland gave Ukraine 18 AHS Krell self-propelled howitzer, published public radio reported in May 2022, citing a government source. The highest-ranking woman in the United Nations has arrived in Kabul at the head of a UN delegation promoting the rights of women and girls. Deputy Secretary General Amina Mohammed's visit Tuesday came in response to a crackdown on women by Afghanistan's Taliban rulers. Mohammed is a former Nigerian cabinet minister and a Muslim. UN Deputy Spokesman Farhan Haq said Tuesday that Mohammed was joined by the executive director of the UN agency promoting gender equality and women's rights. Follow us on the VOA mobile app. This is VOA News. Jury selection kicked off in a San Francisco federal court Tuesday in a case brought by Tesla shareholders who claim tweets by Elon Musk amounted to fraud. Reuters correspondent Jillian Kitchener reports.
The main focus, a 2018 tweet from Musk reading, quote, "Am considering taking Tesla private at $420. Funding secured." Shareholders have said Musk tweets cost investors billions. The lawsuit seeks unspecified damages for shareholders who bought or sold Tesla stocks in the days after Musk's tweets on August 7, 2018. The defendants, who also include seven current and former Tesla directors, have denied wrongdoing. The trial could last about 3 weeks.
Climate campaigner Greta Thunberg was detained by German police on Tuesday while taking part in protests against the demolition of a coal village. Thunberg, a 20-year-old, was carried off by two officers in riot gear. She did not appear to be actively resisting. The internationally famous climate activist was detained while protesting, where she sat with a group of protesters near the edge of the mine. Authorities in the Democratic Republic of Congo are carrying out a facelift in the capital, Kinshasa, ahead of a visit by Pope Francis at the end of the month. But those who work in the informal sector say police are going too far. Reuters correspondent David Doyle has more.
In Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa, police are preparing for a visit by the Pope. This pre-dawn raid is targeting makeshift stalls at a busy intersection. But traders here complain that the operation, called coup de poing, which roughly translates to punch, is going too far. Mr. Jesus has seen his hardware shop destroyed. The police are destroying these women's products. It's not fair. They should do their job properly because we are welcoming a man of God.
Reuters correspondent David Doyle. Authorities in the U.S. are searching for at least two suspects who shot and killed six people, including a teenage mother and her baby, at a Central California home in what the local sheriff called a horrific massacre related to drugs and gangs. Few details were available Tuesday, including what gangs may have been involved and the results of a narcotic search warrant that sheriff's deputies executed at the home last week. Deputies responded around 3:30 a.m. Monday to reports of multiple shots fired at the residence in unincorporated Goshen. Goshen is a semi-rural community in the agricultural San Joaquin Valley. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
Today is Wednesday, January 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. top military officer meets his Ukrainian counterpart as the death toll from Russian strike in Dnipro climbs to more than 36.
Today, Milley went to a Polish military base near the Ukrainian border for their first meeting. It underscores growing ties between the two militaries at a critical time in Russia's war against Ukraine.
UN records alarming rise in the death toll on Rohingya refugees while attempting dangerous sea journeys.
At least 348 people have died or disappeared while fleeing Myanmar or Bangladesh by sea last year, making it one of the deadliest years since 2014.
And Brazilian authorities charged dozens of people for rioting to overturn their former president's recent election defeat. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. The final death toll from a weekend Russian missile strike on an apartment building in southeastern Ukraine has climbed to 45. The victims of the deadliest attack on civilians since the spring included five children, according to the head of the Ukrainian president's office. He said after emergency crews finished combing the rubble that the dead also included 24 people initially listed as missing following Saturday's strike in Dnipro. This as America's top military officer met his Ukrainian counterpart in person for the first time. Associated Press Washington correspondent Sagar Meghani reports.
Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley talks regularly with General Valery Zaluzhny, but until now it was never face-to-face. Today, Milley went to a Polish military base near the Ukrainian border for their first meeting. It underscores growing ties between the two militaries at a critical time in Russia's war against Ukraine, which is nearing the one-year mark. Milley's spokesman says the general will now be able to relay Ukraine's concerns and information to NATO and other defense chiefs who will meet this week in Brussels. Sagar Meghani, Washington.
Russia's war against Ukraine is increasingly targeting the civilian population and the country's electricity infrastructure in a bid, analysts say, seeks to break the will of the people. But huge power ships from Turkey could help thwart Russia's goal, as Doria Jones reports from Istanbul.
Russia's latest attack on Ukrainian civilians not only targeted their homes, the streets of Ukraine are constantly plunged into darkness as Russian forces relentlessly hit Ukraine's electricity infrastructure. But the Turkey-based company, Kar Powerships, says it can help alleviate Ukraine's energy crisis. Its powerships operate worldwide, including in hotspots like Beirut, and can supply millions of homes with electricity. With many of Ukraine's power stations targeted by Russian forces, energy generators are urgently needed. Protecting the powerships remains a significant obstacle, says Kar Power. Ankara has maintained good relations with Moscow, but it's unclear whether the goodwill extends to the protection of the ships. Kar Power says they are looking for solutions.
Now we are in communications with various aid parties. Some are U.S. originated, and also with Moldova authorities and Romanian authorities to also evaluate the possibility of placing the ships in Romania or Moldova and then transmitting the electricity to Ukraine.
Kar Powerships says that with some of its ships already close by, they could be supplying Ukraine with electricity within 30 days. But payment could be the biggest obstacle. But time is not on Kyiv's side, as Russian forces are predicted to step up their assault on Ukraine's infrastructure just as the worst of winter sets in. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Thank you, Dorian. Waterborne diseases and infections are running rampant in camps for flood-displaced victims in Pakistan. UNICEF warns that children in flood-affected districts are dying. It reports some 4 million children are at risk from contaminated and stagnant flood waters. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gal, who was part of a team of journalists who accompanied UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres on a visit in mid-September to some flood-hit districts in Sindh and adjoining Balochistan provinces.
The areas which have been badly affected by the flood waters, there was so much poverty there. Traditionally, these are remote areas and districts in southern Sindh province. There are now waterborne diseases that are now hitting a very large number of children. I mean, as many as 4 million children, according to the United Nations estimates, are living close to these stagnant waters, and are already hospitals there in Sindh reporting large numbers of patients reporting particularly are in quite critical condition. So that is why we see the UN is now pushing for the international community to really help in bringing enough food and assistance to these people. But it remains a challenge, and primarily because these areas were impoverished areas in Pakistan and there was no real development in place, and the flooding has really devastated and destroyed whatever was there with these economically burdened families.
The flooding happened several months back, and reports indicate that agencies and countries poured in millions of dollars of assistance and sometimes medical equipment to Pakistan to help. One would have expected that now things would be getting better. Why is it getting worse?
There are several factors, unfortunately, and one of the reasons is that Pakistani authorities were unable to properly manage the emergency assistance like food items, medical supplies, to distribute them or to arrange that in a fashion that it could have reached the victims. That took some time to organize the distribution, but the scale of the devastation was so massive, as we know, according to the UN and Pakistani officials, 33 million people were directly or indirectly affected by the flooding, and 8 million people were displaced from their homes, like 2 million homes were destroyed. So the scale was so massive that it was expected, or it was hoped by authorities here in Pakistan, that after providing this initial assistance and rescuing people from flood-hit areas, they will be able to initiate the rehabilitation process. But the water did not recede for months in these areas. The destruction of the roads, like thousands of kilometers of roads, were destroyed by the flooding. So it was very difficult to reach each and every victim. And in the meantime, winter sets in, and it makes even harder not only for the rescue teams to reach to the victims, but also for the victims to survive in these freezing temperatures in these areas. So there were multiple factors.
While waiting for international assistance, what is the government doing at the moment to try and help the situation or improve the situation now that there are reports that children are dying?
Well, the problem the government is facing is that there is already a very serious economic crisis. Pakistan is quickly running out of its foreign exchange reserves. Economic activity has gone down because of the political turmoil. So the government seriously lacks funds that could be brought to these affected communities for their rehabilitation and reconstruction. So that is why the government has been really banking on the international community to bring them financial assistance so that they can start new projects.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gao speaking with me from Islamabad. The UN Refugee Agency, the UNHCR, has recorded an alarming rise in the death of Rohingya refugees while attempting dangerous sea journeys in the Andaman Sea and the Bay of Bengal in 2022. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
At least 348 people have died or disappeared while fleeing Myanmar or Bangladesh by sea last year, making it one of the deadliest years since 2014. That was when more than 700 people reportedly lost their lives or disappeared in a desperate bid for protection from persecution. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 3,500 Rohingya attempted perilous sea crossings in 2022. Some 700 people made similar journeys the year before. UNHCR spokeswoman Shabia Mantou says the dramatic increase in the number of people willing to risk their lives smacks of despair among a population that sees no way out of its misery.
Hearing reports, as we mentioned, from Rohingya about this growing sense of desperation and this anxiety about the future, and really the hope for security, for protection. Some of them are willing to unite with family members. Others, their vulnerabilities are being exploited by traffickers or smugglers, luring them with false promises and false hope.
Mantou says most of the 39 boats that made the dangerous sea journey last year departed from Myanmar and Bangladesh, highlighting the sense of desperation among Rohingya in those two countries. In the last 2 months of 2022, she says four boats carrying more than 450 Rohingya disembarked in Aceh, Indonesia, and another boat carrying 100 people disembarked in Sri Lanka. She says one boat carrying 180 Rohingya Muslims is feared to have sunk in early December.
Calls by UNHCR to maritime authorities in the region to rescue and disembark people in distress have been ignored or have gone unheeded, with many boats adrift for weeks. UNHCR repeats its call for prompt search and rescue and timely disembarkation in a place of safety, and for support to countries where Rohingya refugees are disembarked.
In August 2017, more than 750,000 Rohingya Muslims subject to violence and persecution in Myanmar fled to Cox's Bazar in Bangladesh. They are living in overcrowded camps along with hundreds of thousands of other refugees who previously had fled from Myanmar. The UNHCR says conditions in Myanmar have not improved and it is not safe for them to return to a country that views them as illegal immigrants and denies them citizenship. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
United News authorities have charged dozens of people accused of rioting in Brazil's capital to overturn former President Jair Bolsonaro's recent election defeat. In a statement Monday, the Prosecutor General's office said it has filed charges against 39 people in connection to the January 8th riots. The defendants have been charged with armed criminal association, a violent attempt to subvert the democratic state of law, staging a coup, and damaging to public property. The riots bore a strong similarity to the January 6, 2021 riots at the U.S. Congress by mobs who wanted to overturn former President Donald Trump's loss in November's election. Trump was one of Bolsonaro's few foreign allies. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Authorities in the Greater Pibo administrative area of South Sudan say more than 20 people were killed and dozens of others wounded over the weekend following an attack by armed men wearing Ethiopian police uniforms in Yat. A Greater Pibo official has accused Ethiopian security forces of getting involved in South Sudan's intercommunal fighting. For VOA News, my young David Mayar reports from Juba.
Reached by phone from Pibor, Abraham Kelang, the information minister for the Greater Pibor administrative area, says the assailants attacked village of Nyat early Saturday, killing at least 23 people.
The attack happened at a place near the wildlife force. They killed 9 people from the local community, 2 women and 3 children, and they wounded 11 people, including women and children. 500 people have been displaced to the headquarters of the county, which is Jebel Boma County.
Kelang says 14 attackers were also killed during the fighting. He says some of the assailants were wearing uniforms identified as that of the Ethiopian National Police.
The government of Greater Pibor Administrative Area is raising this concern to the national government to tell us why Anuak and Nuer of Ethiopia are interfering in an internal conflict in South Sudan, and that its chief administrator, Lukale Amir, has gone to Juba to meet with officials in the national government.
South Sudan in Focus tried contacting the Ethiopian embassy in Juba without success, as the ambassador is said to have traveled to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. A political affairs officer at the embassy declined to comment, saying she is not authorized to speak to the media. In April 2016, the Ethiopian government says at least 208 people were killed when the Murule from the Greater Pibor administrative area allegedly attacked villages in Ethiopia and abducted at least 125 children and 2,000 cattle. Since then, cross-border attacks have continued between communities along the border between South Sudan and Ethiopia. In March last year, Ethiopian ambassador to South Sudan, Nabil Mahdi, called for an end to the cross-border attacks. Kelang says since that time, there have been fewer attacks by the Murule in South Sudan.
The youth of Pibor have continued to have some clashes with other youths from other South Sudanese communities, Nuer and Denka, who are in this country. And these are some of the many issues we are working on. We are working hard to stop these clashes between the youths.
Last month, youth from parts of Jonglei State attacked villages in Greater Pibor administrative area, killing and wounding an unspecified number of people and abducting dozens of women and children. Nicholas Asom is Special Representative of the United Nations Secretary General and head of the UN mission in South Sudan, says the mission helped rescue 68 children and women who were abducted during the clashes. Asom says intercommunal violence poses a threat not only to the livelihoods of South Sudanese, but could derail the implementation of the 2018 peace deal. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
Scientists are ringing in alarm as ocean temperatures have hit a new record. A study published this week by researchers in China, the U.S. and Italy and other countries says climate change has increased surface temperatures across the planet, causing atmospheric instability and more devastating storms. The research was published in the journal Advances in Atmospheric Sciences and was based on observations from 24 scientists across 17 institutes worldwide. Michael Mann, a professor at the University of Pennsylvania and one of the co-authors of the report, says oceans absorb about 90% of the excessive heat caused by human carbon emissions. But he tells VOA's Carol Van Damme that until we reach zero emissions, ocean temperatures will continue rising and extreme weather events will continue occurring, which he says will particularly affect big coastal cities in African countries that contributed the least to global warming.
You know, this is the fifth straight year now where we've set a new record for ocean heat content, for the amount of heat that's buried in the oceans. And it's important to understand that the oceans are really where you want to go to look at sort of the net effect of human-caused climate change and human-caused warming. Surface temperatures on the planet can fluctuate quite a bit from year to year because of things like the La Nina or El Nino phenomenon. And in fact, 2022 was only in the top 5 or 6 years when it comes to global surface temperature. But when you look at the overall heat in the oceans, it was yet another record-breaking year. And it really drives home the fact that we are seeing in a very profound way the effect of carbon pollution on our climate and on our planet.
With some of these other reports about global warming, it's been said over and over that the biggest polluters are not paying for it like the African countries are, and they're already feeling the brunt of global warming. And then you have some of these, coastal African cities, big cities right on the coast, that when you talk about ocean warming, I would imagine they're going to really be impacted. Cities like Dakar, Monrovia, Accra, Abidjan, what are they supposed to do?
Yeah, I mean, so the ocean warming is impacting us in so many different ways. It's contributing to the collapse of ice shelves off Antarctica, and that's destabilizing parts of the Antarctic ice sheet. Sea level rise, so it creates sea level rise, the inundation of our coastlines from that alone. But the increased ocean heat provides much more energy for intense hurricanes and tropical storms. The fact that the heat is occurring not just at the surface, but penetrating deep into the ocean means that when these hurricanes churn up the waters, they're no longer bringing cold water to the surface. That's sort of a damping mechanism that tends to diminish the intensification of a hurricane. But because we're seeing that heat penetrate down below the surface and deep into the ocean, those hurricanes no longer churn up cold waters, and that allows them to intensify even more. And so we see the combined impact in terms of global sea level rise from melting ice and these more powerful, more damaging hurricanes and typhoons and super typhoons. The net effect is inundation of our coastlines. And as you allude to, in tropical regions, places where they didn't really contribute that much to the problem. And in many respects, they're seeing some of the worst consequences, and they have the least resilience, the least ability to deal with those impacts. And that's a real ethical quandary, and it's part of the complication of the ongoing negotiations.
That's Michael Mann, co-author of a new report in the journal Advances in Atmospheric Sciences and author of the book, quote, The New Climate War, unquote. He was speaking to my colleague Carol Van Damme from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the discovery of classified documents at President Biden's old office and his Delaware home, have thrust Attorney General Merrick Garland back into a situation none of his predecessors have encountered. We'll have this and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hey there, it's Shauna Renee, also known as the Lady DJ, inviting you to join me every Thursday at 10 and 2200 UTC for today's Hit Countdown. Each week, I count down the top 20 songs in pop music according to Billboard and Rolling Stone magazines, but more importantly, according to you, the VOA listeners. Again, that's Thursdays at 10 and 2200 UTC right here on VOA 1.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu from Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Russia's devastating war of aggression against Ukraine continues to exact a human toll on the Ukrainian people. There are now 5.9 million internally displaced people in Ukraine who have been driven from their homes this year, noted Undersecretary for Civilian Security, Democracy, and Human Rights Azrizaya in a recent briefing. More than 7.8 million have fled the country as refugees. As the harshness of winter descends, millions of Ukrainians have been without power, water, or heat because of Russia's unrelenting attacks on civilian infrastructure. In addition, Russia's filtration operations and forced deportations of Ukrainians continue to create horrifying consequences, including the transnational kidnapping and forced adoption of as many as 11,000 Ukrainian children. It's hard to overstate the fear and suffering of more than a million civilians subjected to the Kremlin's horrific filtration operations, said Undersecretary Zaya. Filtration survivors recount threats, harassments, and incidents of torture by Russia's security forces and their proxies in southern and eastern Ukraine. They've had their biometric data captured, identification documents confiscated, and means of communication cut off. The United States is taking steps to hold Russia to account for the atrocities and abuses they continue to perpetrate in Ukraine. We've deployed teams of international investigators and prosecutors to assist Ukraine's Prosecutor General's office in documenting, preserving, and preparing war crimes cases for prosecution, noted Undersecretary Zaya. The State Department-supported Conflict Observatory Program independently captures, analyzes, and makes public evidence of war crimes and other atrocities in Ukraine committed by Russia and Russian-backed forces. Recently, the Conflict Observatory published analysis of Russia's unrelenting targeting of the energy infrastructure in Ukraine, which aims to deprive civilians of heat and electricity during this frigid winter. The Conflict Observatory has also detailed the experiences of hundreds of individuals who describe being victims, survivors, or witnesses of torture or other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment. Tragically, these are only illustrative examples of the immense and catastrophic scale of damage wrought, said Undersecretary Zaya. The United States and its allies and partners in Europe and around the world will continue to stand with Ukraine and its people. As Secretary Blinken declared, our collective resolve to support Ukraine is and will continue to be ironclad, now, throughout the war, and for as long as it takes for Ukraine to succeed.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.